So there's the timer. I'd like to welcome everybody on behalf of JVD. Thank you to Rabbi Kennard for joining us again for a regular enlightening shiur. And we also want to thank SBA Law, who's not present yet, as they've sponsored this delicious lunch. So please take some food and take some donuts, which are also food, and Rabbi Kennard will speak.
And Potkin Bekvodach Sanya, I'm delighted to be here at another JBD, event. And it's wonderful that people can take time out of their busy day and come together and do something Jewish, and in particular to learn Torah. And thank you for that opportunity. So, we're in the middle of Hanukkah. That's why we're eating all this odd food. And Hanukkah does not appear in the Torah. And there are some remozim, there are some allusions. The 25th word of the Torah is the word Or, meaning light. Some want to say it's an allusion to Hanukkah on the 25th day of the month. The 25th stop of the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar was a place called Hashmona, which sounds like Hashmonaim. But seriously, Hanukkah doesn't actually appear in the Torah. However, as we will see, the way the Ramban holds, the Midrash alludes to it based on a pasuk here. So I want to learn the second pasuk of the Sedra of Baalotcha, which, by no coincidence, actually we read on the last morning of Hanukkah. Because it follows on from the main thing that we read on Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the dedication. It celebrates the dedication of the Bet Mikdash in the time of the Hashmonaim, when they cleansed and purified it after the Hellenistic defilement of the Bet Mikdash. And it seems appropriate to read about the Chanukat HaMizbeach, the original dedication of the altar and the Mishkan in the Midbar. And conveniently, there are 8 days of Hanukkah, and there are 12 Nesi'im, there are 12 princes who gave their offerings on each of 12 days. So for the first 8 days of the offerings, we can match up with 1 day of Hanukkah, and on the last day, we read 5 just to make it all finish. And that's what the laning is of each day of Hanukkah. And on the last day, incidentally, we don't just go to the 12th of the Nesi'im of the princes. We then go a little bit further in our laning, where we wrap up and give the final accounting of everything that was given by the princes to the Mizbeach. And then we go a little bit further, as it happens, and we read the beginning of the next section. Because the beginning of the next section is about the mitzvah to light the menorah. The mitzvah that was given to the Kohanim, that there's the menorah in the Bet Mikdash, or originally in the Mishkan, it's going to be lit every day. And so, straight after the offerings of the Nesi'im, the 12 princes of the 12 tribes gave their offerings to the Mizbeach, then we have the mitzvah of lighting the lights inside the Mishkan, which was given to the Kohanim, as we read here. So in the first box it says, the first quote it says, V'yadaber Hashem Moshe Limor, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el Aaron, speak to Aaron, va'amata elav, and you shall say to him, va'alotcha et hanerot, when you literally cause to rise the lights, el mul p'nei ha-menorah ya'iru shiva hanerot, towards the face of the menorah, you should light 7 lights. So Rashi asked a question. A question which, incidentally, sometimes he asks and sometimes he doesn't. And why he should ask in some cases and not others is a whole science. But the question he asks is as follows. So if we go to the next quote, Rashi says, on the word balotcha, when you cause to rise, i.e. when you light the lights, he asks the following question. Lama nismacha parshat hamenorah le parshat hanesiim? Why is the parsha of the menorah juxtaposed to the parsha of the nesiim? So we have the Nesi'im, the princes who gave all their offerings to the Mizbeach. And then we have Aaron being told there's a mitzvah of lighting the lights. What's the thematic connection which explains the juxtaposition? That's Rashi's question. As I say, sometimes there are two parashiyot which seem unrelated, and Rashi asks this question, and sometimes he doesn't. This time he does. And he gives an answer, and I have to say straight away, it's based on a midrash. He takes what the words of the midrash, and he explains it slightly in his own words. And he says like this. Lefi, because Shekashara Aaron Chanukat HaNesiim, when Aaron saw the dedication by all the princes, Chalsha Azdato, he got upset. Shalohaya Imahem b'Chanukah, because he wasn't with them in their dedication. Lohu v'lo Shifto, not him and not his tribe. Let's just explain for a moment. We always talk about the 12 tribes of Israel. There were in fact 13. Because when we talk about the 12, we don't count the tribe of Levi. Sometimes we do include Levi, in which case we join Menashe and Ephraim into one, but otherwise we don't. So the 12 princes did not include any Levim or even any Kohanim. So says Rashi, explaining the Midrash, Aaron sees all the other tribes involved in the dedication, and he gets upset because neither he nor his shevet were involved. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to him, Chayecha, by your life, an expression of a goodness gracious, Shalacha gadola mishalahem. What you get is greater than theirs. Sha'ata madlik umetiv et hanerot. Because you light and prepare and make good the lights. So the basic pshat, the answer that Rashi gives to his own question, is why does the parasha of Aaron being given the mitzvah of lighting the lights come immediately after the story of the Nasi and the princes giving their offerings? And the answer is because Aaron needed to be consoled because he thought he was missing out on something. And the consolation is, what you're going to do, you light the lights in the Beit Mikdash, that mitzvah is even greater, not quite sure why, but it's even greater than what the Nasiim have been able to do. Thus says Rashi. The Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, as is his style, comments on Rashi and politely disagrees. So he starts by saying, in fact, the first paragraph is just quoting Rashi. The last four words say, Lashon Rashi, mi midrash agada. This is the words of Rashi, and Rashi bases it on what the midrash says. And then the Ramban says, Velo nitbarar li, and it's not clear to me, which is a polite way of saying it doesn't make any sense. When the Ramban wants to be cross, when he wants to be more brutal, as he often does when he disagrees with the Ibn Ezra, he comes up with much more brutal phrases. But he politely says to Rashi, I don't understand. It's not clear to me. And I've got a number of questions on Rashi's explanation. First of all, Lama Nachamu Bahadlakot HaNeirot. Why is he going to be comforted with the lighting of the lights? As you'll see, as the Ramban says, there's many other things that Aaron could have been comforted by. According to the way the Rashi explains the Midrash, Aaron is desperate for some special, unique honor, not as in glory, but as in a position that he can serve Hashem with. And the answer in the Midrash is the mitzvah that he's given is the mitzvah of lighting the light. Says the Ramban, that doesn't make sense. Why should he be comforted with that? And he's not comforted with some of the other things which are, I was going to say more unique, but one can't say more unique, which are particularly applicable to either the Kohanim in general or the Kohen Gadol in particular. So the first example that he offers is the Ketoret Boker Be'erev. The Kohen Gadol offers a certain portion of incense in the morning and a certain portion of incense in the afternoon, and that's unique for the Kohen Gadol. And furthermore, Sheshibchu bo hakatu, at the end of the line, the Pasuk praises him for it. When Moshe gives his own brachot to the tribes, including the tribe of Levi, when it comes to the tribe of Levi, he says, Yosimu ketoret ba'pecha, the Kohanim place incense before you. So that's something special for the Kohanim that they get praised for. Why doesn't Hashem say to Aaron, you're upset, don't worry, you can offer the incense in the morning and the evening, because that's really special for you. Or, ubechol hakarbonot, all the sacrifices, uben minchat chavitin, or the various special types of offerings that are given at various different times. Ube avodot yom kippurim, or in particular, how about the unique service that the Kohen Gadol performs on Yom Kippur, she'eino kashera elabo, which cannot be performed by anybody else, the nichnas lifnei v'lifnim, and the Kohen Gadol enters into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is really, really special. V'shehu Kodesh Hashem omed b'heichalo, and in general, the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen, is holy to God, who serves in his sanctuary, l'sharato, to serve him, u'levarech bishmo, and to bless in his name. These are all things which are really special for Kohanim, and each of them is arguably more special than the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. And he continues, we haven't finished yet. V'shivto kulo misharate elokeinu. End of the third line. And his tribe are all servants of God. Another question. V'od, ma tam l'chalishot hadat hazu. What's the reason that the Midrash would give for this being upset? Aaron sees him, sees him, and he's upset. Chal shadata, why should he be upset? V'halo karbono gadol mishim. Actually, his offering is greater than what the Nasiim are doing. Shehikriv b'yomim ha'heim korbanot haber kol yimei hamiluim. Because he offers at those times
at the same time, many sacrifices all the days of his inauguration. Something we don't often realize, that the description given in Parshat Tetzaveh and then repeated in Parshat Shemini, Parshat Tzav, of the procedure to inaugurate Aaron and his sons for 7 days as a whole complicated procedure that they do every single day with lots and lots of sacrifices, and the Nesiim giving their offerings, which is described in Parshat Naso, happened either at the same time, according to one, or a week apart, according to another, but more or less at the same time. We don't realize that because they're put in different parts of the Torah, but they're actually going on simultaneously. There's a third reference to the same event at the end of Sefer Shemot as well. So, says the Ramban, the Nesiim are giving their presents to the Bet Mikdash. Aaron is giving a whole host of special offerings because he's about to become the Kohen Gadol. That being the case, why on earth should he be, as it were, jealous in the nicest possible way of what the Nesiim are doing? So those are basically two questions. Number one, why is he pacified with a relatively insignificant mitzvah of lighting the lights when he could have been pacified by lots of other mitzvot? And number two, why is he upset in the first place? Because he is also doing something special, just like the princes are doing. And then the Ramban offers you a possible argument to defend Rashi, which he will then reject. And that comes in this third paragraph. Ve'im tomar shahayu chova nitztava behem. If you want to say that they had an obligation commanded on them, all those things which we've listed as possible alternatives would not have sufficed. The question the Ramban asked was, all those other special things that a Kohen does, why doesn't the Midrash mention any of those? And you might say that they don't count because they're mitzvot anyway, they are obligatory. V'chol shadato al shelo hikriv nadava kamohem l'chanukata ba'amizbeach. And then the reason that he's upset, you might suggest, is because he wanted to do something voluntarily like the Nesiim are doing. In other words, the various mitzvot of the Kohanim, and in particular the miluim, the inauguration procedure, Aaron it doesn't have an opportunity to give a free will offering voluntarily, because there are things he has to do anyway. And maybe you want to say that he's upset because the princes have an opportunity to give something voluntarily. He says that won't work either. Why not? Gam hadlakot ha'neirot shenachamu bo chova v'nitztava aleha. Because the very thing that the Midrash says, or Rashi explains the Midrash is saying, as appeasing Aaron, is also compulsory. So he says, you might want to give this argument to say Aaron was desperate, he was upset because he wasn't able to do a voluntarily thing. That doesn't make sense, because the response from Hashem is another compulsory thing. So we're stuck. So we're stuck with the questions the Ramban asks on Rashi. And now the Ramban gives his own answer. And basically he's saying, Rashi, Kavodah Bimkomo, has misunderstood the Midrash. When the Midrash talks about Hadlakat HaNeirot being the thing that appeases Aaron, it was not referring to the daily mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Mishkan. It was referring to something else. And he says, Aval, so fourth paragraph in the Rambam, Inyan HaHagadah Hazu, the meaning, the idea of this piece of rabbinic narrative, Lidrosh, is there to be expounded, Remez min ha-parasha, al Chanukah shel Neirot, shahayta babayit sheni. It refers to the lighting of the lights that took place in the second Bet Mikdash, al yedei Aaron uvanav, through Aaron and his sons, Rotsalamar, Chashmanai, Kohen Gadol Ubanav. As we say in Al Anisim, that the rebellion against the Hellenists was led by Chashmanai, we're not quite sure who he was, but he was a Kohen Gadol, Ubanav, and his sons, Yehuda, Maccabee, and all the rest. And they were Kohanim, and their father, Chashmanai, was Kohen Gadol, a direct successor of Aaron. So what's happening, and we'll elucidate this further, what's happening is Hashem is saying, so it says Ramban, the Midrash is saying that Aaron is upset because the princes are giving their offerings, and Hashem says, don't worry, you're going to do something, not you personally, but your descendants from your legacy, your seed, are going to light the lights, referring not to the daily lighting of the menorah, but referring to Hanukkah. Referring to Hanukkah. So we need to understand a bit more about this. What does it mean that Aaron's appeased in this way? Why should Aaron be appeased in this way? And as we explore further, it's going to give us new insights into what is the meaning of our lighting the menorah. So he says, in order to back up his point, that he, the Ramban, has got the correct interpretation of the Midrash, and Rashi, unfortunately, has an incorrect interpretation of the Midrash. Rashi says the Ramban has missed the point of the Midrash. And he says, you know what, I'll prove it. Because he says, Ubalashon hazeh. And in the following nuance, following formula, Matzatiha b'Megillat Starim l'Rabbeinu Nissim. I found the following text in a book called The Hidden Megillah of Rabbeinu Nissim. It's not actually a Midrash, it's Rishon. It's many years after the Midrash, but nevertheless, he is quoting the Midrash, and let's see how he quotes it. Shehizkir ha'agada hazu, he mentions this Midrash, v'amar, and he, Rabbeinu Nissim, it says the following on that Midrash. And he says the following. Re'iti b'Midrash, I, Rabbeinu Nissim, now being quoted by the Ramban, saw in the Midrash, kevon shehikrivu shneimasa shvatim, v'lo hikriv shevet Levi v'chulei, since the 12 tribes offered things to the Mishkan, and the tribe of Levi did not offer, amalo hakadosh baruch hu l'Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, daber el Aaron, go and speak to Aaron, it's quoting our pasuk, v'amarte alav, and say to him the following, yesh Chanukah acheret, there is another Chanukah, sheyesh ba hadlakot ha-neirot, that has in it hadlakot ha-neirot. So this version of the Midrash explicitly links Chanukah to Chanukah. Chanukat ha-mizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach by the princes, to our Chanukah, the Chanukah that we're eating about today. And you know there's going to be a connection to it, or rather the Hanukkah of the future is going to be distinguished by Hadlakot HaNeirot, which is why this Midrash comes on the Pasuk, which talks about Hadlakot HaNeirot, and saying that's a remez, that's an allusion to our Hanukkah. Va'ani oseh ba'li Yisrael, and I, God, will do this Hanukkah of the future for the Jewish people, al yedei banecha, through your children, nisim v'teshua, miracles and salvation, v'chanukah shekruya al shemam, and a Chanukah that will be named after you. Right? There's going to be a plaque saying, this Chanukah, v'hi Chanukat Beit Chashmanaya. We will call it the Chanukah of the Chashmanayim. So you'll get your name up there. Leficha hismich pasha zu l'pasha Chanukat HaMizbeach. And that's why this pasha of the mitzvah of the menorah, which is an allusion to Chanukah itself, is juxtaposed to the offerings brought by the Nesim. So what has happened so far? Is the Ramban now in that paragraph brought another, quoting of that Midrash, but that Midrash, that version explicitly and unambiguously linked it to the our Chanukah. So there Aaron is upset, and the solution to his being upset is there's going to be a Chanukah acheret. Now, notice in that Midrash, it doesn't actually give a relative value of what the princes have done with compared to what the Chashmonaim have done. It's just going to be another Chanukah, a Chanukah acheret. This Chanukah acheret will be distinguished by lighting lights, hence the reference in the Pasuk where we started. And it's really good for you because you'll get your name called after it, or rather it will be called after you. It'll be called the Chanukah B'nei Chashmonaim. But then he says, and here comes the last paragraph, and I, the Ramban, saw further in my learning. It's very interesting. Just sometimes he does this. He sort of takes us through his own learning journal, as we might say today. He says, first I read the Midrash, I read Rashi, I worked out the Rashi's missed the point, then I saw Rabbeinu Nissim, and then I saw in the Tanchuma the following. V'chein b'Midrash Rabbah, and similarly in Midrash Rabbah. Now, what he's trying to bring another proof that his interpretation is correct and Rashi has missed the point. This one doesn't explicitly talk about our Chanukah, but see how he uses it. So, end of the first line. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Lech emor la'aron, go and speak to Aaron. Al titjare, don't be afraid. L'gadola mizot ata muchan. You are prepared, you are worthy, or you are fitting for something greater than this. Greater than what the Nesi'im are doing. By the way, that's what Rashi quoted At the end of the Rush, he says, Chayecha, Hashem says to Aaron, by your life, Shalacha Gedola Mishalahem. What yours is greater than theirs. What you're going to do, which Rashi understood as lighting the lights every day in the Bet Mikdash, is greater than what the Nasiim did. Now, this Midrash, what the Ramban's now quoting here in the end of his words, gives us a clue why it's greater. And here it comes. The Gedola Mizota Tomuchan, you are set aside, prepared for something, for greater than what they are doing. And it's as follows. HaKorbanot Kol Zaman Shebet HaMikdash Kayam HeNagin. When it comes to sacrifices, which, by the way, the Nasiim have offering, not that they've been doing the sacrifices, because they're not Kohanim, but they've been bringing various animals, which are then going to be sacrificed. Now, sacrifices are all very good, but they only apply while the Bet Mikdash stands. When the Bet Mikdash finishes, there's no more sacrifices. How do we get the merit of sacrifices? We learn about them. We say Korbanot before shul, but before davening every morning, unless you're in certain shuls where they miss them out, for reasons I still don't understand. Anyway, so sacrifices are all very good, but that only applies during the time of the Bet Mikdash. Aval ha-neirot, but the lights, li'olam, forever, el mul p'nei ha-menorah ya'iru. Quoting the pasuk, towards the face of the menorah, they will be lit. Now, there's an obvious problem here. Unless you go with the Ramban, you can see where he's going. The lighting in the Bet Mikdash doesn't last forever. It surely is just as time-limited as much as the Korbanot are. But nevertheless, the Midrash says, you're going to get the lighting which will last forever. So that obviously raises the question, in what type of lighting is it referring to that's going to last forever? And then he goes on, V'chol ha-brachat shenatati lecha levarech et b'nai. And all those blessings which I gave to you, the Kohanim, to bless my children, einon b'teinim la'olam. They're not going to be cancelled forever. That's referring to Birchat Kohanim, which, by the way, comes immediately before the section of the Nasiim, in the middle of Parshas Naso. The Kohanim are told about the Varechachai Hashem Yishmerecha, etc., the Birchat Kohanim, and they're told they're going to say it every day. Now, they said it every day in the Bet Mikdash, and they carry on saying it after the Bet Mikdash. In Israel, certainly in Yerushalayim and other parts of Israel, they say it every single day. For reasons which are unclear, in Chutzlaret we don't say it every day, but actually it was a mitzvah deraita to do so, but the minhag is not to. But there you have a clear example of bracha, which are given to the Kohanim, which outlast the Bet Mikdash. So what we have is Hashem says in this Midrash, in this version of the Midrash, that what you are getting, Aaron, is greater than what the Nasiim are getting, because Korbanot, like they've been bringing, only last while the temple lasts. But you're going to light the lights which last forever, and you're going to give brachas which last forever. Now, brachas lasting forever we understand, because Birchat Kohanim takes place every day, at least it should do, but we don't. By the way, the reason is, the Ramah says, because we're not happy enough, and you have to be very happy to give Birchas Kohanim, so the only time we're happy enough is on Yom Tov, because we get the extra Simchas Yom Tov. The message is, if you live in Israel, you're much happier. If you live in Chutz Laretz, you're unhappy. But that was beside the point. So the middle bit that the Midrash mentioned is obviously what the Ramban is focusing on, when it says, the lighting the lights is going to last la'olam forever. So he says at the end of the third line, V'hinei davar yadua, it's well known, Shekasha'ein bet ha-mikdash kayam, when the mikdash doesn't exist anymore, v'ha-karbanot betelin, and the sacrifices are cancelled, mipnei charbano, because of the destruction of the mikdash, af ha-neirot betelot, the lights are also cancelled. So what does it mean? We know the answer because we've seen the answer already. But what is it? The question is, what does it mean when the Midrash says, that Hashem says to Aaron, you're going to light the lights forever? That can't refer to the lighting in the Mishkan, as Rashi said, because that's not forever. Aval lo ramzu eila leneirat chanukat chashmanai. But it must refer, it must allude to our Chanukah, the Chanukah of the Chashmanayim. Shehi noheget afla achar chorban. It applies even after the Bet Mikdash is destroyed. Begalotenu, while we are in exile. And similarly, Birchat Kohanim, which is juxtaposed on the other side, immediately before the offering, the dedication by the princes, no heget la'olam, also lasts forever. And therefore, darshu smuchim lachanukat anasiim lifnecha umelacharecha. There's a drasha. They expounded the juxtaposition to the Hanukkah of the Nesi'im, the dedication by the princes, with something before and something after. Immediately before, as I said, is the mitzvah of Duchening, or Birchat Kohanim. Immediately after is the mitzvah of Hadlakot HaNeira, which we now understand alludes to Hanukkah. B'chvodo shel Aaron, and they both refer to the honor, the glory of Aaron, shelo nimna imahem, who was not counted with them, with the princes. So now the Midrash makes much, much more sense. Aaron sees all the princes. He's not amongst them. He's upset, and Hashem says, what you're going to get is much greater than what they have, because it will last forever. Because there's Birchat Kohanim beforehand, which will last forever, but the main focus is there's the Chanukah, referring to our Chanukah, which will also last forever. So what do we get from this? Well, we get from this a number of things. First of all, the main purpose of learning is to understand the Chumash and to understand the Midrash. So the Ramban's given us an understanding of the Midrash, which he argues, and I think is pretty convincing, is a better understanding of the Midrash than Rashi. The next thing to say is, what the Midrash, with the Ramban's understanding, is doing, is comparing the Chanukah of the Nesi'im with the Chanukah of the Chashmonaim. And he's saying that the Chanukah of the Chashmonaim is greater than the Chanukah of the Nesi'im. And why should that be? And I would suggest it's the contrast between creation and recreation, or dedication and rededication. To put it very simply, to start from scratch, in many respects, is easier than rebuilding. Because when you rebuild, you have to climb out of the rubble. You have to take a people who would have been downtrodden and oppressed and under the yoke of the Hellenist Greek Seleucid Empire. An empire which, by the way, overrode everything in its path, which is why the story of Hanukkah, actually from a historical point of view, is so rare and so unique, because it just didn't happen that nations, small little nations, rebelled against mighty empires and re-established their own political sovereignty as the Chashmonaim did for more than 100 years. It just didn't happen. But ideologically, which is what, as we know, the real battle of Hanukkah was about, ideologically, for the Hellenists to try and destroy Judaism because it was out of date, because it was old-fashioned, because it was primitive, was the norm. We don't have many other cultures from those times which survived, because they were all ridden over by the Hellenistic juggernaut. For the Chashmonaim to come and say, you know what, there is hope that we can rededicate the Bet Mikdash, we can relight the menorah, we can carry on. And it's not just the oil that burns for longer than planned, but Jewish life itself will carry on, not just against the rules of nature, but against all the rules of history. That, in many respects, is a harder challenge, and therefore a greater prize. So Hashem says to Aaron, dedication that the Nesi'im are doing is all very well. What you're going to do is something much greater. You're going to be there for the rededication, for the recreation, for the rebuilding, for the creating the hope out of destruction. And the other thing that we can learn from this relates to our own practice of Hanukkah. There aren't actually that many halachas relating to Hadlakot HaNeira. There is one that everyone seems to know, because we sing about it in HaNeirot HaLalu, which is you can't get any benefit from the menorah. That's one of the reasons we light a shamash, to make sure there's a little light which is not part of the menorah. So if we do get benefit from it, we can say we're getting light from that one and not the others. And what's the reason for that? What? Yeah, but there's a reason before that, right? Hanerot alalu kodesh heim. These lights are holy. Now, okay, it's in the song. It's not actually necessarily halacha, but it's in the song. But on what basis are these lights holy? I mean, it's quite a technical question. There are some things in the world which are tashmishei kedusha, and there are some things in the world which are tashmishei mitzvah. Some things which are designated with holiness because of the way they're made, tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, are invested with kedusha and have to be treated in a certain way because they've been invested with kedusha. There are other things which are not invested with kedusha per se, but they are used for a mitzvah. They're tashmishei mitzvah, they have to be treated with respect, but they don't actually have inherent kedusha. Most things that we use for mitzvah are in that category. And one would have thought, and according to some, by the way, a menorah that we light is in the second category. It's a tashmish, a mitzvah. It's a use of a mitzvah. It's not inherently kodesh. However, We sing in the song, and because they are holy, we can't benefit from them. Where does this holiness come from? Says this Midrash, as explained by the Ramban, the menorah that we light is the continuation of the menorah that was in the Bet Mikdash. The way it reads is there are certain things that happened in the Bet Mikdash which ceased when the Bet Mikdash was destroyed and will be returned when the Bet Mikdash is rebuilt, but in the meantime they're not there. Korbanot, for instance. There are other things that happen in the Bet Mikdash which are la'olam, which last forever. And one of those, or the classic example, was ha'neirot la'olam el mul panei ha'menorah iru. The menorah will be lit forever. And how is it lit forever? Where is it lit forever? The answer is in our homes. When we light the menorah, according to this, we are continuing in a direct, unbroken line the lighting of the menorah that was in the Bet Mikdash. The menorah that was in the Bet Mikdash undoubtedly was Kodesh, had Kedusha, could not be used for any profane use. That, therefore, is the reason that our menorah cannot be used for any profane use, because it is a continuation of the menorah in the Bet Mikdash. It's interesting to note, and it's a common theme for Droshot, that the observance of Hanukkah, apart from eating donuts in business offices, the observance of Hanukkah is entirely in the home. There's a lot to say on that, and I've come to the end of my time. But basically, what we're celebrating, what we're commemorating, is that, as I said, Jewish life carried on, Jewish life carries on, and it carries on in our homes. Our homes are, each one of them, a Mikdash Ma'at, a little sanctuary, a little place of holiness. And for this week, we light in those homes a menorah, which is a direct continuation of the menorah that was lit in the Bet Mikdash, and thereby we transform our homes into mini versions of the Bet Mikdash itself. Thank you very much.